At our previous discussion meeting, one of the subjects suggested was love. It is an excellent subject for consideration because it is a subject which cannot be discussed. It can be considered deeply. And here is an opportunity for a combined meditative process which accompanies the communicating of our own insights with each other. So I'll put it open now for consideration in this meeting. Take a minute or two to feel it out and then speak.
Someone who is in great pain needs to find You can call it another person, but it isn't really another person. It's a universal entity from somewhere. It might be the Roman Catholic priest, it might be the rabbi, it might be a nurse, it might be anyone. But you see, someone will take the hands of this person in pain, and there is an immediate response. There is nothing personal. This is just sheer unconscious love. And this is the way it can be manifested here.
Love seems to be the bond that holds everything together. The passage that I find most moving in relation to this way of looking at love is the passage in the Upanishads that relates everything to the self with a capital S in Dr. Radhakrishnan's translation. It lists everything, not for the sake of this is this dear, whatever it is, the son, the worlds, the father, the husband, the wife, the son. Listing one after another, it repeats over and over again, and there's a sort of cumulative feeling about it. Not for the sake of the wife is the wife dear, but the wife is dear for the sake of the self. Not for the sake of the son is the son dear, but the son is dear for the sake of the self. And so it goes on listing everything. And in this way we get a feeling of the all-encompassing bond that holds everything together. I once had a letter, a very, very simple thank you letter from somebody for a very small favour I had done them. And the words were quite ordinary, and I sat looking at this letter, and an emanation came from it of love. And it had nothing to do tangibly with the words, but it was very, very potent.
You introduce this, whereas you said that love was something that one really could scarcely speak about. Is it not perhaps true that most of us have ideas about love? We've heard definitions of love, and in its transcendental aspect, there are very few of us who have been able to attain the state of consciousness and intelligence which we understand and are taught is love, prajna and karuna. Personal love is something that I think everybody, with very few exceptions, have experienced sometime in their lives. Some of us have been more fortunate than others in having a relationship where there's been true communication, a commingling of two people that has produced communion and love of a very high standard. We all know the pitfalls of relationship, particularly what we call, what Krishnaji calls this loaded term of love, the possessive love, always wishing to alter the beloved. This is one of our great problems, isn't it? But I think everybody, I hope everybody, has had some glimpse of what it is to receive and to give up. And as the prayer of St. Francis says, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. If you're an instrument of peace, you must be a loving person. And he goes on and says that it is better to love than to be loved. But in a way, that's a contradiction, isn't it? Because if you are love, certainly if you're love personified, you are both loving and loved.
It seems strange that this symbolic one, love, Jesus was called the God of love, should be difficult to speak of. Beginning of this discussion, it was as if the room was holding back. I have to say that I think suffering is always very much associated with love. When you have it at the ordinary level, for want of a better word, the feeling of its passage, its passing, so is a painful thing, even at the intensive moments of experience. And in a deeper sense, you have it in the crucifix with Jesus on the cross, which is love crucified. And I think you can't prove love, really, or experience the deeper depths of love, even for people you love very much, without there being some element of sacrifice or suffering. I can't explain it very well, but I feel the two are very closely associated in order to prove love. Prove its very existence.
Is it not true that love in its early, almost elementary stage, simple stage, has a transcendental quality about it? It's only when the world creeps in, when desires creep in, when other feelings come, that love seems to alter and suffering comes alongside it. In this connection, I would like to put in a small plea for a form of love which is rather badly thought of nowadays, and that's love of country, which can be, and I think often is, in times of crisis, almost a transcendental form of love. It is almost as though it makes people act out of character, to do something that they would not normally be capable of doing.
Surely it's this love of country that leads to war. You can't differentiate between the two kinds of love of country. There can be the prejudiced kind, and no desire in our country, this is pure, this is my country, I'm working for it. And there's the kind where you try to do the best for it without being prejudiced
towards visitors
and people who
would
like to live
in
it as well.
Yes. More often than not, patriotism is another word for just loving your country and hating others.
Not necessarily, indeed. I mean, thousands of people.
Well, hating is a strong word. But in a superior way, thinking that one's own country is the best, and if that is thought by many countries and nations, the inevitable result must be war.
Oh, true. This is false. Surely it is a false form of patriotism. This is not what I mean by the love of one's country. The love of one's country doesn't mean that other countries are bad or even not as good as your own. It just means that you love your country and are prepared to work and, I would say, if necessary, fight for it.
But this is only one country, isn't there? The world.
Yes, there's a peculiar form. There's something about one's own country that is unique to us. You know, it's like the love world, in a way. You might say, we should all love everybody, but then one
one person, a particular one, gets to know and love. And this is true in a different sense of one's country.
So there's one person who gets to love only. It isn't love.
I went for a walk this afternoon and I went down to the river and I watched the running water and we looked at some plants and we looked at the pebbles, the different things in the sky and the trees and the different greens, and I was just suffused with love for everything. There wasn't any personalities included in it. It was just what I saw, I love. That's all I know about love.
It's comparatively easy to love nature, isn't it? People are a test, aren't they? Wasn't it one of the existentialists, Sartre, who said, hell, that's for a definition of hell, hell is other people.
Well, it's like Lafayette who said, the more I see of man, the more I love my dog.
Do we love nature on a bitter February night when we're standing at the bus stop in the street waiting for the bus that doesn't come?
It's just the other face of the beautiful trees, isn't it? The other side of the coin.
I think we do. We know the seasons have to come round, and if we approach it in the right way, we know that snow and cold is just as beautiful and lovely as the heat and the sun and the trees. So
I agree with you. Could I go back to what Ingrid said? And she asked, is love this or any particulars? And after this comes the question, is there love without any distinction whatsoever? And what is it that makes the distinction within love? Is love something that you direct personally, or is there, irrespective of what you do about it, a constant inner state? So no matter whether you are with people or with trees, one inquires whether, what is it that makes me say I love this or I love that? This and that, this obviously implies distinction, implies fragmentation, implies particulars, the breaking up of totality, the breaking up of this unified movement, life in its totality, the nation, in a sense, life into particulars, and so directing our love. So from there, one is perhaps going to question what impedes this love. What is it that makes for barriers coming upon this love? Division in all its forms, alienation, conflict in all its forms. So rather than plunge straight into the question of what is love, what is it that does not make for love?
When I was considering it at the beginning, I found that it was easier to say what love was not rather than what it was, but in that respect, it's like infinity and transcendence. And I felt that it took us back to the talk that we had this morning about the chakras and about Shakti and Tara's conjugation with Shiva coming down through all the chakras, down to the very lowest, and then back to the heart chakra and residing there and giving out this non-attached love to absolutely everything. And I felt that that was the only description of true love that I could find at all.
So it is that what makes us not love is really our self-centeredness, the grasping factor. And I think if Theo speaks so much about mindfulness, I think if we are really 100% mindful, we are in love and we can't help being in love and loving.
We never hear of Jesus saying he loved anything or anybody. Because when you say that, surely it implies that there's something that you don't love.
That the disciple that Jesus loved.
Yes, he didn't say that, though, did he?
No. But surely we have to start somewhere. I mean, nobody's 100% mindful. And there are things that attached, I mean, our concepts of things, nasty, horrible, I mean, the factory built you out smoke, we're not going to start by loving that. Surely we ought to try and make a start on nature and then work forward. Can't say we should love everything when you don't love even the things you should love.
I think love is a diamond, many faceted, but nevertheless a diamond. It's unshakable, unbreakable. True love, I mean, universal love. No particular facets of everything all in one. We're still very much in the world of ideas and definitions. So really, it is something that is almost impossible to speak of.
I think we're all very conscious deeply that we don't know what love is at all.
No, we can start. Surely, I wonder if there's any possibility of us sitting here this afternoon of touching something upon the quality of this love, of really coming somewhere close toward it. So that after we walk out through that door, there will be something in the matter of some transformation at least. I can only speak for myself now. It seems to me if one is to get anywhere, one must start very simply. To start simply, bearing in mind what first talks about the linchpin of awareness of mindfulness, inquiring into what it means to be mindful, and to surmise briefly this in mindfulness, creating the division between the observer and the observed, the space between what you see and space within you in the center that creates that space. So if in some small way we can come close to touching that movement that unifies the two, then there's a possibility of looking at people and looking at things without any separation whatsoever. Like a marvelous rose or the sky or the face of somebody. An awareness which expands freely. No barriers.
Loving involves a willingness to be totally vulnerable. A feeling of communion with others and with everything, because what you see is in fact yourself. This thing, am I my brother's keeper? You're not your brother's keeper, you are in fact your brother. So this opens every door of communication. It opens every door to hurt and rejection and all those things.
But that doesn't matter. Because love itself is the strength that holds everything together. Including one's own personal self. Including those who don't realize what it is. Because if they recognized it, then they would be transformed. So that one can continue to be vulnerable in security, total security.
I think love is non-discriminating, a non-discriminating condition. That the rose doesn't change its smell for someone coming up to smell it, or a bee, or a dog, or anything. It's the same all the time. There's no differentiation. It's just a condition that exists.
How strange that we're pointing to nature all the time when we talk about perfection. Never human beings, always trees and flowers and animals.
Is it because trees and animals and flowers, nature is itself and nothing else, and man, unfortunately, isn't what he doesn't appear to be what he is?
Surely one does not exclude children, does one? Freedom.
I think as Dick says, if we would all shut up for a few moments and go into silence, something might just happen.
All right. Now we've had the period of silence. What happened during this silence?
I think love is like a grace of God. It just happened on different consciousness when one's very young.
Yes, but what happened during this silence which we went into? You see, the suggestion made by Dick was that if we went into silence, and you took it up, and I said, all right, and we had about 7 or 8 minutes silence. Now, what happened during the silence? Silence, of course, as far as the spoken word was concerned.
Well, a thought that came flooding in was that love was an openness. Which meant letting go not only of material things, but of ideas. These attachments, in fact, were the stopping of love.
So you had a thought, an idea.
Yes, that thing.
Surely love has nothing whatsoever to do with thought. Thought must be well out of the way before it could come into being.
No, that's your judgment.
My judgment.
Yes. But what happened to you during the silence?
Apparently nothing.
Yes? Anybody else?
I found that I was reviewing my own experience of love.
A thought came to me, which was, is joy another name for love? And if it is, we probably know more about it under that name than under the name love. I've had lots of moments, presumably not necessarily deserved, when I seem to have been absolutely flooded with a sort of feeling of, I can only call it pure happiness and joy, like being in light. And it could be the darkest day, it has nothing to do with circumstances.
And I did ask myself the question, is this another word for love?
I had a picture of Mother Teresa in India. I had a picture of, you know, thought of Mother Teresa in India and love in action there.
I think as long as we are in a state of ignorance, we cannot know real love. We can know it in fractions and here a little bit and there a big bit, but we cannot know true love. And I was just thinking that Jesus said, love thy neighbor as thyself. And it always has puzzled me, because who is that thyself? And how can you love your neighbor if you don't know yourself? And unless you know yourself, it is impossible to love your neighbor with the true love, the true kind of love, and not the selfish kind.
I looked at the fact that I don't know what love is. And I considered when I was least likely to be the cause of disharmony. And I considered that and found that only when I'm in the state of harmlessness, when I'm not considering having opinions, and when I'm in a state of turmoil and confusion, then there is no question of understanding peace or intelligence, let alone love. And so I realized that only in the state of harmlessness, it's not a question of my not harming me or others, because if one is in a true state of harmlessness, then there are no others. The beginning of understanding this is when the dividing line between us just is no longer there.
I remembered that I had experienced love flowing out to me from other people and from nature. But when I looked at myself, I ended by feeling that I myself cannot love. I can only be a channel through which love can flow. A phrase came to me from Wilhelm's translation of I Ching, which talks about the great Tao which sustains and nourishes all things. And then it seemed that, to me, that we get into difficulties because in trying to talk about it, we're separating ourselves from it. And this is impossible because it is the primal energy which is everything, from which we cannot separate ourselves. So this is why we can't talk about it as if it were something else, because there isn't something else.
I kept wanting to know what Mr. P. Rose thought himself about it. I kept going to know what he think about it.
But a picture of Christ on the cross came to me, and all I could think of was love, was self-negation.
I tried to pick up Dick's idea of silence and what happens, and I tried to feel love, let's say, and I couldn't, really, I just couldn't.
was all enclosed here, and I just didn't go any further. And I tried good vibration. I don't think anybody picked it up. At least it didn't come back. And then from there on, it went into verbalizing. And that trying to explain why one feels, like Dorothy did, with nature, one lets one's barriers go. This intellectualizing, I thought. But then I remembered I felt the same thing with nature. They can't kick back, or a tree won't kick you back, or a beautiful plant. And one doesn't hold back anything. One partakes rather than holds back anything. And I think this, what you hear us talked about, this self-centeredness, or whatever it is, this is what we are all in here, and not out there. Whereas I think we are more like leaves on the tree, that you are a leaf and I am a leaf, and we are connected. But I don't think we know it.
Into my mind floated Cahill Gibbon's phrase from one of his poems, "Work is love made visible." If I'm wondering how this was manifested at times.
I think we have to start from the fact that any combination of words would be inadequate for what we're trying to get at. I don't think we can really verbalize it. But I think we could start by getting rid of things which it is not. Eroticism, loving kindness, joy, friendship. And there could be many other things you could say it is not. In order to get to where it is, which I think is almost indescribable, I think the nearest to explanation which you could verbalize would be your words. Timeless conjugation, when the two are together in such unity and in such completeness, that is when the real act is. And also, the next nearest I can think of is our friend Krishnamurti with his observer and observed. And these to me seem to be the nearest you can get to this most difficult problem. Otherwise, as has been already said, love is completely multiform in the lower echelons. Which, is that love, we have to ask ourselves.
I felt that one just cannot define love, because if we try to do that, we are putting our own inflection and our own understanding onto it. Love probably is just a split second, it just happens, it just is, and that is love.
From Nicholas's dissertation, I got the feeling that nature gives out its love without any holding back. There's no saving some for later or for some other person or for something like that. So we get the communion with nature that we don't feel with people, because there's always something held back. There's always something kept for yourself, for myself. And that this is why we never get the feeling with people that we get with nature. Somehow, I think it only exists in the state of purity.
I think mindfulness, developing such a sensitivity that I try to keep within this room, and surely everyone here has some problem which is terrific to himself or herself. If each of us have this sensitivity which comes with awareness. We don't need to know the problem, but surely we can share it this way, just within a small group of people.
If I could just say that we ought to be somewhat bankrupt, and I personally feel certain shame about it. It's good. Not about you, about me. And it might be a very good starting point. And the shame gets bad enough. Give us a lot of petrol for the years ahead.
Thank
Shame surely implies an ought to be something. I don't think there are any oughts, really. Surely we see the manifestation of total love all around us in everything. Have we not been experiencing it here? In one another? In these sisters who look after us with love and care and attention? In every blade of grass out there? Each one formed out of love itself. The energy of love that brings about the creation of everything. We're suffused with it, we're made of it, and nothing else is. So we're all members one of another in this thing. So there isn't any separation. There can't be. It's the very stuff of everything.
But if this were a reality in our lives, Penny, we wouldn't be sitting here discussing it. You see, we know this intellectually, but it isn't part of our being. And we have either to admit, you, as Krishnaji says, you can't turn love on. You can't suddenly sit down and say, right, I turn the tap, I'm loving. You're not. And as Dick says, you either have to come to terms with the fact you do not love, you do not understand love, and let us look at it that way, neither condemning nor indulging ourselves, running away from it, just looking and seeing what that will reveal. But if we're not honest with ourselves, and if we're going to create a lovely world, again, of fantasy and ideas, and talk about love and what it is, how many of us are going to go back to our dreary jobs, our monotonous jobs in the city and elsewhere, full of frustration, full of problems, full of trials, and when we're tested, when the boss comes along or someone else comes along and starts giving us a rocket, are we going to say, ah, Mr. Jones, just think of all the lovely flowers and the grass all around us? If we're really honest, we're not. I mean, Shakespeare, nobody could have put it more beautifully than Shakespeare did in his sonnet. But do we understand that? Is it in the fibre of our being? I can give you the bones, I can give you the flesh, but the marrow you must find for yourselves. Now, isn't it the marrow that we're trying to find? Sorry, Therese, I've spoken too much.
It was suggested that we all speak.
We're all very limited, and we've just expressed it in our own way. We're all in our infancy as far as knowing what love is. Therefore, we're just expressing it to the best of our ability. Practicing is the lifelong challenge that we're here to help ourselves to work on.
What Penny said just now, it is gradually sinking in as one is here and as the week passes, that we are, as she said, we are love. But in the instance one realizes it, or just an inkling of it here, one realizes that one doesn't realize it all the rest of the time. One doesn't realize it all the rest of the time. But the moment you realize it, it is no more. You're already into the past. Because you're back in your mind. Cut off.
Whatever we try to say positively about love has almost nothing to do with love itself. These are ideas, opinions, and so forth. Love is not something which can be thought of, which can be sought, which can be spoken about. We can never know love in the ordinary sense in which we use the word know. And yet, love is a reality. What then can we consider? What can we be mindful of? We can consider and talk about, and we can be mindful with regard to everything that obstructs love. Is envy love? Jealousy, ambition, violence and hate, of course, we would say, has no relationship to love. Now, these are the things that we know. Similarly, we know that we like somebody, are attracted to somebody. We know the desire to possess somebody, to be nice to them, as we call it, and so forth, to do things for them, to give ourselves, as we say, to them. And all these things we call love. But bear in mind that all this lies within the sphere of ambivalence. That which the world commonly calls love, and that which obviously is not love. What the world commonly calls love, as well as that which we all know is not love, belongs to the realm of the mortal, belongs to the realm of delusion. It comes within the sphere of attachment and aversion. It comes within the sphere of grasping. All this we can know. All this we can be truly mindful of. And in the perfect mindfulness, in seeing this for what it actually is, it disappears. Ambition disappears. Envy, jealousy, possessiveness, partiality, all these things disappear. And then, what happens? The reality of love is there without our knowing it analytically. The reality of love will function, and it is only afterwards that memory will raise up the functioning and will say that, that was an expression of love. We can't turn on love like turning on a tap. Absolutely not. We cannot cultivate love. There are so many who follow the discipline of substituting a friendly thought for a hateful thought, of substituting an appreciation of another person's qualities when we are reacting against his bad qualities or the fact that he hurt us. All this we can know, but the reality of love we can't. And if we think that we are going to cultivate love by merely substituting the opposite of what is not love, we are under a delusion. Because these deep things, particularly where love is concerned, they are transcendent. They are not finite. They bear no picturization, no formulation in thought or in speech. If we perform actions because we know, we have calculated that this is a loving action, that is not the reality of transcendent love. There is one other aspect too. All that happens in the world of duality spontaneously, which is an expression of relationship, of unity, that is an expression of love in the dualistic sphere. Penny quoted the Upanishad. Comes in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where the great teacher Yajnavalkya talks to his wife Maitreyi about love in the transcendent sense. And he says, not for the love of the husband is the husband dear, but for the love of the ultimate reality, the Atma. But for the love of the Atma is the husband dear. And he goes on like that. And then says something extremely significant. Were there not the love of the Atma, then husband, wife, sons, possessions, your great qualities, everything deserts you because it belongs to the realm of the mortal. But where there is the love of the Atma, which is indescribable, unthinkable, which is there because all the obstructions are out, then every form of expression which promotes unity and harmony is an expression of the unknown and the unknowable love. So, on the practical side, we have to be mindful constantly of all that actually happens here, which we know does not belong to love. Anger, violence, hate, everything like that, as well as ambition, envy, jealousy, all those are not love. Every sense of separation, every sense, everything that disunites some way or other is not love. That we can know, and knowing it and being thoroughly mindful of it, seeing it for what it is, we dissolve that obstruction, and the reality of love is here and now.